being selected by Jenny Finch and her team for the book of the month is quite frankly one of the pinnacles of any writer's ambition. Don't ask me how I know this. I just do.
Hello there. This month's book is Dragonflight by Anne McCaffrey. Dragonflight is the first book in Anne McCaffrey's long-running Chronicles of Pern series. First published in 1969, it sets the scene for the many later books and introduces a number of the most important characters. The story centres on the planet Pern, a long-established colony now forgotten by Earth. Initially appearing idyllic, a semi-rural society has developed a form of feudalism. However, unknown to the colonists, a planet on an elliptical orbit comes close enough roughly every 200 years to spawn vicious parasitic worms. These silver creatures burn and destroy all organic life and almost wipe out the human inhabitants until they develop dragons, flying and fire-breathing creatures that can destroy the menace in midair.
As for this matter of short supplies, on that, Lesser would act, especially since Urgul would not. And since Urgul could not protest what he did not know, she would contrive, with the help of Kinet or Fëanor, or however many she needed, to keep the ware decently supplied. Eating regularly had become a pleasant habit she did not wish to curtail. She did not intend being greedy, but a little judicious pilfering of a bountiful harvest would go unnoticed by the hold lords. Kinet, though, was young. He might be rash and indiscreet. Perhaps Fëanor would be the wiser choice. But was he as free to manoeuvre as Kinet, who was, after all, a bronze rider? Maybe Segan. The absence of a retired blue rider, time heavy on his hands, might not be noticed at all. Lessa smiled to herself, but her smile faded quickly. The day the weir has to barter for what should be given. She thrust back the premonitory shudder, concentrated on the ignominy of that situation. It certainly emphasized the measure of her self-delusion. Why had she thought being at the weir would be so different from Roath Hold? Had her early childhood training instilled such a questionless reverence for the weir that life must alter its pattern because Lesser of Ruatha had been impressed by Ramoth? How could she have been such a romantic little fool? Look around you, Lesser of Pern. Look around the weir with unveiled eyes. Old and hallowed is the weir, yes, but shabby and worn and disregarded. Yes, you were elated to sit in the werewoman's great chair at the council table, but the padding is thin and the fabric dusty. Humbled to think your hands rest where Moretta's and Tyrannia's had rested. Well, the stone is ingrained with dirt and needs a good scrubbing, and your rump may rest where theirs did, but that's not where you have your brains. The shabby wear reflected the deterioration of its purpose in the scheme of life on Pern. Those handsome dragon riders too, so brave in their wear height, accoutrements, proud on the necks of their great beasts. They did not submit kindly to close examination without a few disappointing revelations. They were only men, with manlike lusts and ambitions, full of very human faults and frustrations, unwilling to disrupt their easy existence for the harsh exigencies that would re-establish the wear. They had settled too deeply in the isolation from the rest of their race. They did not realize they were little thought of. There was no real leader at their head. Fëanor, what was he waiting for? For Lesser to see through Urgul's ineffectiveness? No, Lesser decided slowly. For Ramoth to grow up, for Nementh to fly her where he can. Traditionist that Fëanor is, and Lesser thought this excuse to be specious, and the mating dragon's rider became traditionally the were-leader. That rider. Well, Fëanor might just find events not turning out as he planned.
Dragonflight opens some 400 years after the last attack, and the dragons and their riders are on the verge of extinction. Pern's landowners consider the stories of parasitic worms, called Thread, to be a myth, and ignore the precautions and customs that saved their ancestors. Searching for a new female to adopt the last remaining queen, Flower discovers Lesser, the only surviving member of a noble family who has been hiding since a child. Though initially reluctant to abandon her birthright, Lesser agrees to accompany Flower and try to link with the baby queen when she is hatched. Together, they try to revive the fortunes of the last dragon's hold and find a way to save Pern as Thread begins to fall once more. Anne McCaffrey was a most prolific writer, producing more than 65 novels, many of them collaborations with friends and family, as well as numerous anthologies and short stories. She was the first woman to win a Hugo Award for fiction for her novella We're Search in 1968. In 1969, she was also the first to win a Nebula for another Pern-based novella, Dragon Rider. Together, these form the basis of Dragonflight. Her Dragon series is her most famous and popular, and she worked closely with her son, Todd, for a number of years, co-writing and developing the universe she had created with him. This has enabled him to continue writing the stories following her death in 2011. Anne McCaffrey wrote many of her novels as series, some of two or three books, and some of more than a dozen. Although they often have a different focus, the background underpinning much of her work is consistent, based loosely in a universe governed by the Federated Sentient Planets. In the Dragon books, the colonists have lost contact with the FSP over some 2,000 years, and their social and economic system has evolved independently. There is a lack of technology on Pern, as many ideas and skills vanished in the first waves of attacks. This allowed her to develop a very different type of society, though she was adamant her books were science fiction rather than fantasy, as the dragons have been created through genetic engineering and selective breeding, a hard science approach.
It was infuriating of Lesser to take this moment when all his energy and attention ought to go to settling the Holder's grievance for a show of rebellion. Why did she have to flaunt her independence so, in full sight of the entire Weir and all the lords? He longed to chase immediately after her and could not. Not until he had seen the army in actual retreat. Not until he had signalled for the final show of Weir strength, for the Holder's elucidation. Gritting his teeth, he signalled, "Nementh aloft." The wings rose behind him with spectacular trumpetings and dartings, so that there appeared to be thousands of dragons in the air instead of the scant 200 Bendon Weir boasted. Assured that that part of his strategy was proceeding in order, he bade Nementh to fly after the werewoman, who was now dipping and gliding high above the Weir. When he got his hands on that girl, he would tell her a thing or two. Nementh informed him caustically that telling her a thing or two might be a very good idea, much better than flying so vengefully after a pair who were only trying their wings out. Nementh reminded his irate rider that, after all, the golden dragon had flown far and wide yesterday, having blooded four, but had not eaten since. She'd be neither capable of nor interested in any protracted flying until she had eaten fully. However, if Falar insisted on this ill-considered and completely unnecessary pursuit, he might just antagonise Ramoth into jumping between to escape him. The very thought of that untutored pair going between cooled Falar instantly. Controlling himself, he realised that Nementh's judgment was more reliable than his at the moment. He'd let anger and anxiety influence his decisions, but Nementh circled in to land at the Starstone, the tip of Bendon Peak being a fine vantage point from which Falar could observe both the decamping army and the queen. Nementh's great eyes gave the appearance of whirling as the dragon adjusted his vision to its farthest reach. He reported to Falar that Piant's rider felt the dragon's supervision of the retreat was causing hysteria among the med and beasts. Injuries were occurring in the resultant stampedes. Falar immediately ordered Kinnett to assume surveillance altitude until the army camped for the night. He was keen to keep close watch on the Nebelese contingent at all times, however. Even as Falar had Nementh relay these orders, he realised his mind had dismissed the matter. All his attention was really on that high-flying pair. You had better teach her to fly between, Nemanth remarked, one great eye shining directly over Falar's shoulder. She's quick enough to figure it out for herself, and then where are we? Falar let the sharp retort die on his lips as he watched, breathless. Ramoth suddenly folded her wings, a golden streak diving through the sky. Effortlessly, she pulled out at the critical point and soared upward again. Nemanth deliberately called to mind their first wildly aerobatic flight. A tender smile crossed Falar's face, and suddenly he knew how much Lessa must have longed to fly, how bitter it must have been for her to watch the dragonettes practice when she was forbidden to try. Well, he was no Ragul, torn by indecision and doubt. And she is no Jora, Nemanth reminded him pungently. I'm calling them in, the dragon added. Ramoth has turned a dull orange.
McCaffrey moved away from the United States to Ireland in 1970 and lived the rest of her life in Wicklow. In 2005, she was inducted into the Science Fiction Hall of Fame, one of only 8 female writers to be accorded this honour. Although the Pern series is her largest, with 18 books and 6 collaborations, McCaffrey considered her stories about a brain ship her favourites. There are similarities in the stories, with both dragons and the sentient ship having a close and exclusive mental relationship with the protagonist. I first encountered the dragon books as a student, buying a second-hand copy of Dragonflight at a jumble sale in Birmingham. I had that copy until a year ago when the pages finally fell out and I had to buy a new one. I have read the entire series over the years and enjoyed them all. If you are new to McCaffrey's Dragons, you have many happy hours of reading available, and I have to say I envy you.
The words of Jenny Finch there, obviously a passionate Anne McCaffrey fan. Although I have to say, spoiler alert, I might well be responding to this in the same way that Jenny responded to Adrian Tchaikovsky and indeed Armin Shimerman. But let's not let my unconscious bias or possible prejudice influence any folk whatsoever. Suffice to say, before we go to Rob Nichols, I always have issues with novels that either drop the F-bomb too frequently and also novels that effectively, consistently like to put in apostrophe after apostrophe after apostrophe after apostrophe. But that's another line. Rob Nichols, what did you make of Dragonflight?
I didn't notice the apostrophes, Alex. I'm sorry. I wasn't looking closely enough. It's a fascinating story. I'm always a bit sort of, it takes me a bit of time to get into a science fiction or a fantasy book that's set in some sort of like medieval, as they often are, some sort of like medieval feudal system where there is no technology and no mobile phones and no a lot of these communications, a sort of selective lack of technology often. But it's very interesting in that you've got different groups of people that each have their role in that society, but that because it had a lot of lessons for us in the fact that collective consciousness they'd forgotten why each group in the society had their roles to play and what they were all about really, You often go into these books and think, well, that's ridiculous. That never happens. And then you think it starts raining and just keeps raining forever. And you realize that there's a climate change thing and everyone's forgotten what that's about. So it's a lot of interesting things to think about from the book and some good characters.
I'm not averse to the science fiction epic in any way, shape or form. And Frank Herbert's Dune, I think, has similarities with Pern insofar as the range of characters, the range of epic notional things and so on. There was something about this, though, which somehow felt me thinking, look, Grass by Sherry S. Tepper, superb, absolutely magnificent. That did everything in a much shorter time span. And I'll be honest, I found this a bit of a tough read. It took a lot to get through the first 150 pages. Without me saying, not another apostrophe driven so from that point of view. I suspect you probably will have to dive in and keep diving in until you start getting the whole sense of our heroines, our characters, the ways in which the telepathy actually functions, and so on. I felt that, again, in terms of characters, clearly the heroine of the soul, who ironically again starts off because she's using the magic as a somewhat haggard, almost witch-like figure, perhaps, because and as we find out, she was made an orphan and has and Lesser has worked through all sorts of things that, and but is a manipulator, a very successful manipulator, but still a manipulator, and she has those ways of actually connecting with the dragons and the lines from that. I would have been very tempted, and I know this is heresy to Anne McCaffrey fans. I would have been tempted to chop about 150 pages from this book, and I think it would have possibly been a lot tighter as a result of that. But again, we're talking about the start of an epic here, and it is an epic, and it has gone on, it goes on and on in all sorts of ways. I mean, Jenny, I hope I'm not raining on your parade in this area, but I did think, hang on a minute, this Jenny, who actually criticised Children of Time with respect to Adrian Tchaikovsky in terms of his epic nature and stuff, and I thought, what?
I couldn't understand it. That was the problem.
Yeah.
I couldn't visualise it, whereas I could visualise these. Also, I read it when I was much, much younger, and presumably my brain was a little more flexible.
Grass was really, really confusing for the first 150 pages, and if I remember, and it became really good, but basically you really had to get through this. Well, you said it to yourself, Alex.
Yeah.
You said stick through it, but I thought that's a difficult thing to do when you've got a book that you know that you the first half you're just not going to understand the word of it. It's, you know. But I do think what always sort of gets me is the time travel in some of these books. And I think it sometimes is kind of like a convenient solution to everything. Oh, that's why that happened. Oh, that's why that place was unpopulated. But truly, there's all sorts of time travel. It sort of drags up a lot of problems as well, doesn't it? It sometimes works for some things, but on other things you think, well, why did that not change? Well, why did that not happen? Why did they not know this?
And I also have to say, you mentioned time travel. Probably it's another bias coming across here, but the persistent use of the term "we're" was too mindful of a certain football club, some 20 odd miles away from me. And I'm thinking, this is not "we're" side. We've got Mackems here on their backs of dragons, basically. So maybe again.
We don't mind that this week, Alex.
That's very true. Yeah, we obviously a trancing, which just goes to show that performances can go. But that's for another show entirely. I would say this is a book which clearly is worth. I mean, what I'm surprised at is nobody doesn't, as far as I'm aware, there hasn't been a Hollywood bid for this. So, I mean, have there been? Because obviously I cited Dune as an example, which clearly has been made and is coming out to, again, a second part is working through. I mean, Jenny, we have the technology now. We've had How to Tame Your Dragon. We've had dragon movies coming out of left, right and centre, arguably Fire and Ice and George R. R. Martin and the whole Game of Thrones aspect kind of owes a lot to Anne McCaffrey's work in terms of this area. I would still dispute, even if she's in a different dimension, I still dispute that this is a science. I think it's a science fantasy book. I don't think it's a science fiction book, but that's, I do think, because of, as Rob said, there tends to be a weaving of the magic of telepathy and obviously the way in which it takes a long time before we kind of reach this point of these are genetically engineered beasts. You know, a long, long time before you get into that. And maybe you say it's just the time of the year that's there. But I think, again, the caveat, you really need to be prepared for a long slog before you, because there were several times, I think about 20% in, 30% in, et cetera. I thought, this is going to be the first. I'm not going to be able to get through this, basically. But, you know, perhaps that's just, again, my own personal sort of prejudices.
I found it remarkably easy to read, but then I had read it, as I say, when I was a great deal younger, when I was 19, I think. And I've read most of the others over the years as well. Some are better than others. Mm. And as far as the apostrophe is concerned, when you impress a dragon, you lose the first vowel of your name and an apostrophe comes in. So it's like Sir whatever. So he was Felah, and he lost the E and became Felah, apostrophe.
Which would it's probably be if there was a glossary or something to actually explain that. Because yeah. I kind of felt that, well, yeah, it was almost an affectation. And I felt it probably wasn't, because I'm sure that McCaffrey was a writer who kind of thought long and hard about these kind of things. I did. I mean, I had The Ship Who Sang, excellent. Actually,
oh, I love
another,
The Ship Who Sang.
Another writer, a contemporary in many ways, with the Earthsea Quartet, which is fantasy basically, is Ursula K. Le Guin. Again, excellent. Yeah. Somehow this just didn't connect with me at this particular time. Again, maybe it's because it always brought back my old line about, well, when you've got dragons in there, it's automatically fantasy, and it just seemed to be it didn't kind of connect on this. Rob, what about characters? I mean, now we've actually identified, thanks to Jenny, why there are so many apostrophe-riven characters in there, because obviously they are the dragon riders of Pern, which is fine. Which characters stood out to yourself as a sort of key aspects and indeed holders of the Weir, etc.? I mean, was it Lesa? Was it indeed Fanar? Which again, for some bizarre reason, I kept thinking of Finbar Saunders and his double entendres, which regularly has Fanar on various other things. I thought, well, you know, could the Viz people have actually taken that from Anne McCaffrey? Just a thought. Anyway, back to you, Rob.
It was Lesa. Is that how we say her name? Yeah. I thought, because a very rounded personality, very prickly, doesn't necessarily, definitely doesn't do what she's told to do. Obviously, she's been in disguise for many years, and she's not going to be she's not going to be bossed around. But she has a temper on her. She has but she's very intelligent.
There was indeed a sequence where I thought, oh, I see. Well, that's obviously where the head of the Spanish FA actually got the decision to actually implant a kiss on her in an aggressive manner. When the mother of all dragons is actually given birth, and there's such joy and happiness that actually they're there, and she's being grabbed left, right, and center. I'm thinking, I don't know whether that would go well in the 21st century.
Yeah. It's well, I think the start of the book, when there's the quest and they're going looking for women or young women,
it's really
bizarre.
A little bit dodgy, I felt. I mean, I think it was those sort of moments where I'm thinking, I don't know where I'm going with respect to this one. Basically, I don't know where Jenny's taking us with this recommendation.
that's right. And I think when you were mentioning being 10% through a book or 20% or whatever. I don't know about you, but when I know that it's the first of a long, long line of books, I kind of wonder whether when I get to the end, whether there won't be any discrete end, because we've read some books like that where it's basically you're left on a cliffhanger, and it's really, really frustrating, because it's like you think to yourself, do I have to read 10 books before I come to anything, that any sort of conclusion or anything? But I'm not sure that was the case with this book, but it does make you think it as you're going through, of course.
To be fair, that again crossed my mind. I thought, you know, knowing Rob's views on trilogies, let alone decologies, this could end in tears. Jenny, your favourite character, I was obviously steeped in the Pern lore.
Yes, my favourite character hardly appears in this book. He just appears, Robinton, the Master Harper. Of the characters from here, I like the character that forms when Lesa impresses the dragon, Ramoth. And they become, Ramoth becomes much stronger and Lesa becomes a lot more gentle. And I like that combination very much. The same thing worked for the Ship Who Sang, where the two together make one perfect whole. The whole is greater than the two separately. And I thought that was very well written. And that turns up over and over again in different characters, in different dragons. And I thought that was lovely. So that's my combined favourite character.
There were, of course, a number of other issues in terms of silent M's, pronunciations of Gemma, Gemma. I even sort of had to access the audiobook version read by Sophie Aldridge to actually find out how to sort out the pronunciations. All just minor irritations in terms of, we know that a big strength of science fiction is what's referred to as the Verfremdungseffekt, the literal making strange, that it's a whole new world that's actually being engaged with. And again, hats off to Anne McCaffrey for some excellent world building, but world building is mostly a domain of fantasy, whereas science fiction is extrapolating from where we are to where we may be. And I suppose that even though I have also said in many a time, many a class with students that the Arthur C. Clarke law that any sufficiently advanced technology is indistinguishable from magic could be applied, in which case, yes, this definitely is science fiction because you've got lots of magic in there, then it maybe was too much in my face. And I probably wondered why I hadn't encountered this before. And I think it was because of all of the things that basically pressed all the wrong buttons for me with dragons, fantasy, etc. Although you had to mention Fanar. Exactly. And Viz and the apostrophes, etc. However, all said and done, I think it's worth reading. Although I have to say, Grass was a far superior novel. I mean, that was written, I think, slightly before this. Again, if memory serves, that was a 1960s novel from Sherry S. Tepper. Or am I misreading the time zones there?
No, Grass came a little bit later. Tepper didn't start writing until she actually retired from her full time job.
In which case, Grass may well have been influenced by Dragon Riders of Pern and Dragonflight, and that was the whole notion of the horses and the other aspects. Because I felt that there were areas within that seemed to be crossing over, again, in terms of the strange environment, the strange world, and the other areas. And Rob's point about climate change, again, I think is a fascinating one, because, yes, the notion of memories and the fact that actually these are human beings, whereas it takes a lot before we start seeing them as human beings, as opposed to creatures a bit like James Cameron's Avatar, where they're on a different planet and sorting out the other things from thence. Would you like to see a motion picture version of Dragonflight, Jenny? Or is it a case of, no, the theatre of the mind is so much better?
I don't know. I think it would be a good picture, yes, but you have no guarantee nowadays you are going to get a good picture. It would be lovely to see one. I would probably see a screenwriter managing to get like six of the novels and cram them into one single very, very confusing picture, which would be very sad.
Or they might treat it with the respect it actually does merit and deserve. Although it has to be said, I probably wouldn't, if I'd been on the awarding class at the time, have awarded this as many awards as it has been awarded. But nevertheless, there you go. Having said all that, I'm going for a 7 out of 10 for this. So, Rob, what's your score?
I'll be slightly higher. I'll go for 8 out of 10.
We may well be speaking to Jessica Burtis in a later part or later segment of this programme, because I know she had a few things she wanted to actually say about this. So, we'd be interested to see whether she also shares your view, Jenny. Jenny, are you going for a 9?
I'm going to go for an 8.5. And partly that's because of two things. One is because, as Rob pointed out, she manages to take the first of a series and give it a resolution. And each book gets a resolution. And whereas it's very much a setting up book, it does actually have a distinct, discrete plot and a story. You don't feel you're just... she's putting pieces onto a chessboard, and that takes a tremendous amount of skill. So for the skill in the writing, I would give it 8.5.
And given that she obviously lived for much of her life in Ireland, how far away is she, or would she have been from yourself, basically? Is there a McCaffrey area you can actually visit?
You can go along and you can see Dragonhold, which is her house, which was built into... and actually into a big hill. And I think Todd lives there now.
Yeah. Ever been tempted to go along as a fellow writer? Or indeed a Fern fan?
Very possibly sometime in the future. I don't think you can actually go in, but you can go and see it. She had a horse ranch and a few other things up there. She lived very comfortably.
Well, she was a successful writer. And indeed, We appreciate that whole thing. As I say, 7 out of 10 is not a bad score, but I've given you the reasons in terms of why I couldn't go any higher from that particular perspective. Next up, we're back to vampires. Yes, it's Halloween. It's the season of Halloween. So vampires have to come to the fore in all sorts of strange ways. It's also, even scarily, Rob, a Richard and Judy book selection. So, allowing for that...
Sorry.
Jenny, would you like to reveal what our next book of the month is going to be?
Yes, the next book of the month in honour of Halloween is The Historian by Elizabeth Kostova, which could is a been, cracking... You know,
could have been in honour of Rob as well, of course, because he does have a historical background. Although, spoiler alert, obviously, there are vampires in this particular text, Rob.
Yeah, right.
And librarians. Lots of librarians.
Oh, right.
Book of the Month on Southside Broadcasting. Podbean.com, probably the best download decision you'll ever make.
Well, we've heard what Rob Nichols and indeed Jenny made of Dragonflight, but as we said, coming from it from experience, and as I've already revealed, for me, yeah, a little bit of a tough read. But anyway, let's turn to Jessica Burgess. Jessica, Anne McCaffrey, her writing. What did you make of this first in an epic saga, no less, of Adventures for the Dragon Riders of Pern?
So I had heard of Anne before, but I had never actually read any of her work. So it was interesting actually getting to read what I kind of feel like is a very influential piece of dragon fiction from the 1900s, because I think I really liked Aragorn a lot as a kid, which I know that series is contentious, but I really liked The Inheritance Cycle quite a lot as a kid. It was one of my first fantasy series that felt very high fantasy. And the dragons were a massive selling point. So, I mean, anything with dragons, I'm automatically going to enjoy that setting. There's a reason why humans just... so many different cultures invent dragons. We just, throughout the years, we love stories about dragons. There's something about it that just gets us. And I think that that's probably like the biggest strength of the book is the world. Because I think that around when she wrote it, I don't think that there were quite as many stories around dragons and things like that. So I think that she had quite a lot of originality with the idea and the whole idea of threads and how they are very destructive. That took me off guard when I first was reading the description. I was really confused about that. I didn't really understand how it was going to come together. But I think that her book is also more plot driven than character driven. And I think for myself, I often tend to prefer character driven books. So it was interesting getting to read a book that was more plot driven, which I think, I don't know if it's because it was more or it was less focused on the characterization. I wasn't the biggest fan of some of the characters, but some of them had the actions were a bit questionable. I think anytime I read a book from, especially fantasy and sci-fi, from just older books, they obviously, I feel like it's just like beating a dead horse to talk about how they can have like sexist elements, because they do, but I still like to look at the book itself with the writing. But it was a little hard to look past with like flair. I think that's how you say it. Yeah, flair and the shaking. So I think that those elements were kind of difficult. So I understand why you're saying it's a bit of a difficult read. Elements of it, but I'm still so impressed with her originality with it, because I feel like with any fantasy and sci-fi, there's parts that are difficult to be original. I don't necessarily think that books need to be original, but with this one, it was done interestingly, I think. But yeah, it was just hard to get a little attached to the characters. I think Lessa had a lot of agency, though. I do think that she was an interesting character too. I mean, dragon riders are, it's just cool. Everybody wants to be one. So, you know, but I thought that she was still a good character. It was just kind of difficult to read the relationship, if you can call it that, with Flair going on.
Yeah, interesting. So did you have a favorite character? It could, of course, be a dragon. I mean, we've got Nementhe, as a dragon. We've got all of the other dragons that are there. I mean, they're equally valid as characters. Did anybody stand out to yourself in terms of this is the life form, or this is the creature that for me made the text?
I think that, I mean, the dragons are like the best part of the book to me, but I think the thread, can I consider the threads a character? I think the threads are my favorite character because I've never like heard of something like that before. I thought that was so interesting just because at first I really didn't like that idea. I was like, this is bizarre. And then I was like, oh, actually, this is really interesting. Maybe Amazon, I wonder how she thought of it. I need to read some interviews or something to understand her thought process because it impressed me.
We spoke earlier in the text, of course, or in this particular program about how the way the science fiction element of this text was brought in, which Anne McCaffrey always saying this was science fiction. I still would dispute that. I mean, I think it takes a long time before you start seeing the genetical modifications and the fact that dragons have been created by human beings and it all interconnects together from that. And this is the human race in the far future. Whilst I appreciate that, I still stand by what I was saying earlier. It is a bit of an epic, in the same way as Dune and the Frank Herbert novel is an epic. But somehow I found this a little bit tougher to actually get through. Plus, it does actually come up with one of my own personal sort of biases, which is why all of the apostrophes. Thanks to Jenny for clearing up why the apostrophes were actually used. But sometimes I think, look, enough with the apostrophes already. You can actually do without it. I mean, it's like apostrophe sicker, you know, because you apostrophize the E, etc. You know, AX because you apostrophize the L and so on. It just becomes an irritant after a time, really. But anyway, what's your score for the entire text, Jessica Burtis?
I think for this, I'll give it like, I'm thinking a 6.5 to a 7. I'll be really specific and give it a 6.75. Because that's where my heart feels is right. But no, I agree with everything you're saying. Somebody was saying it was sci-fi, and I was like, I don't understand how. But because somebody was like, well, it's sci-fi because it's on a different planet. I'm like, that's not sci-fi, but okay. I don't know. But I mean, they're both like fantastical settings. I don't know. But yeah, it's.
As we said, Harry Potter could be seen as science fiction because, in the words of Arthur C. Clarke, as we mentioned earlier, any sufficiently advanced technology is indistinguishable from magic. And on that line, yes, it is science fiction, but I still think it's a bit of a stretch to see this as a science fiction text. Sorry, Anne McCaffrey, I appreciate you're still arguing about that case, even up in heaven. But I think, yes, science fantasy, perhaps. Science fiction, maybe not.
Yes. Mm-hmm. I think that's a better one. Yeah, hard to get behind the hard sci-fi line, but.
Well, we've wrapped up the score, and again, interesting, I think, in terms of the range of scores we've actually had. Yes, as we said, I think Jenny's sticking with an 8 or an 8.5. Rob also with me on a sort of 7, 7.5 or so. I think I might have gone to 8. I'll have to play back the actual podcast. And Jessica, of course, an interesting perspective on that. So with next month's book, already lined up and ready to go. And a reminder, if you weren't actually sort of around for the first part of the program, or you've just for some reason actually just dropped into the whole sequence, the next book takes us into the spooky world of Halloween and other areas with respect to that. Halloween, Librarians and Vampires. It's by Elizabeth Kostova, and it's entitled The Historian. So that's the book of the month for the Halloween period, etc. And early November, of course, The Historian by Elizabeth Kostova. To Jessica Burtis, to Jenny Bill, to Rob, of course, Rob Nichols. Huge thanks. And to you, dear listener. You see, I'm getting all these apostrophes mistaken now.
Jessica, Jenny Burtis.
Yeah, precisely. Anyway, keep on reading.